Okay, let's start. You can just say your name, my name is, and I'm undermining. Yes.
My name is Tyler, and the thing that I'm undermining is our cultural belief in
now
the way
we one word.
Fashion.
He's using fashion to undermine the system that he was born into. Asha.
Hello, my name is Capella Alpai. I'm undermining the systems I was born into with Olelo.
With what?
Olelo.
See, now we see what I'm saying? We can ask questions. Okay, later. Yes. Thank you.
My name is Sarah, and I'm undermining the systems I was born into with stillness.
Wait a minute. I got to write these down. This is too good. All right. So free typography. Who's next?
And it was
fashion.
T-1?
Yeah. T-1? Mm-hmm. Okay. In fashion. Who is next?
Capenna.
How do you spell it?
K-A-P-E-N-A.
Okay. And Olelo? How do you spell it?
Okina, so apostrophe O with the line over it. L-E-L-O.
Okay, thank you.
Sarah, stillness.
Do you have an H, Sarah?
I do.
Okay, you guys call them out.
My name is Stephanie, and I'm undermining the systems I was born into through design.
Through design? A. Okay.
My name is Kelsey. I'm going to go with listening.
Is it
K-E-L-S-E-Y.
Okay. And what are you using?
Listening.
Awesome. Who's next?
Cato with a C, and I would say with joy.
Jane, simplification.
David, what you are.
David said ritual.
Yeah.
You can go that way.
Alan, and I'm undermining the system I was born into with unlearning.
Thank you.
I'm Eric, surrealism.
Is it I-C-K?
I-C-K.
Okay. Surrealism.
My name is Umeme, and...
U-M-E-M-E?
Yes.
Okay.
And I guess I would be using ancestor veneration.
That's two words. I'm going to write them as one.
It's a thing.
I know it's a thing. I know it's a thing. I'm just teasing you. This makes me happy to write. Okay, who's next? I'm so tall, I can't. Okay, what next? Who's next? I'm not ashamed of my knees. Oh, we're saying our name and one word that you're using to undermine the systems that you were born into. The oppressive systems that you were born into. But you can wait and think about it if you need to. We'll come back.
Jake is my name.
Okay.
Writing.
Okay. Thank you. Who else?
I'm Leslie. Facilitation.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Berkeley, I undermine systems I was born into. responsibility. Hyphenate.
Is it the, like the university or the town Berkeley spelled like that?
There's one less E, but it's fine.
Tell me, B-E-R-K-L-Y?
K-L-E-Y.
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 Okay, and you said?
Radical responsibility.
Thank you.
My name is Jiva, which is spelled J-I-V-A, and storyteller.
Thanks.
Hello, everyone. I'm Pascal, and I'm Lisa Ravens.
Hi, Pascal.
Hey.
Can you all hear people's responses? And if not, look on here, okay? Okay, I'm gonna read them out loud. Don't worry. Speak up so everybody can hear you.
Jonathan is my name, and running is my game. And it's J-O-N-A-T-H-O-N.
Okay.
My name is Borealis. And I'll say queerness. Queerness.
Thank you. My snapper over here. You should say my snapper. Give me such life.
Who else? J-W-O, J-W-O.
Okay.
Thriving.
Through thriving? Thank you. Right?
Hi, I'm Erica, E-R-I-K-A. The act of theater.
The act of?
The act of making theater such
okay.
A theater.
Okay.
My name is Micah in Disrupting.
M-I-C-A. A-H, okay. Disrupting. Okay, thank you.
Suhan, attention.
Suhan, how do you spell your name?
S-Z-U-H-A-N.
Thank you. And you said yours was?
Attention.
Thank you. And your friend beside you? Hi.
Name? I just walked in.
Name. Okay. Yes, you can tell.
Oh, name and one word that describes the systems that you're disrupting that you're going into.
So, my name is Nat, and
sorry, the way that you're disrupting the system.
Counter-normativity.
Would that be oddities?
Awesome. Thank you, Nick. Who's next?
I just went.
Oh, okay. Okay.
The connection.
How do you, just a V?
Just the letter.
Okay, and connection. Anyone else want to throw one up there that hasn't? Everyone do theirs? Okay. All right, so here's the things. Typography, fashion, olelo, stillness, design, listening joy, simplification, ritual, unlearning, surrealism, ancestor veneration, writing, facilitation, duality, play, body, the person's actual body, hiking, radical responsibility, storytelling, ceramics, running, queerness, thriving, theater, disrupting, attention, counter-normativity, and connection. So there's like all these new besties in here that you just have to know now, right? I didn't want to miss the opportunity to be able to know who we're in the room with. My goal today is to be able to share with you how my work in Richmond, Virginia points out people within the continuum of time that have been doing similar work to the things that you've been doing, and how you can use ancestor veneration in your communities to help strengthen the movements that you're leading and a part of, so that people that are are doing these things and feel kind of like, you know, alone, or they don't have that, like, that passion for being involved in a larger movement, they'll realize that this has been going on forever and ever. People have been pushing against bullshit forever. And so we have to really take time, because there's this word that I use often that my elders taught me, which is simba simbi, to hold up that which holds you up. Thoughts become things. So we're going to think about some things together and figure out how we can support one another from far away. Okay? So the first thing I want to do, now that we know one another a little better, is to talk about this topic of the day, the Commemorative Justice Movement. It's a people-powered movement that I use tactical urbanism to strengthen. It's a well-hatched plan that we're about to lay out. So that means that we're scheming. Are you okay? I mean, I know I have one disruptive person at least. So that's okay, but this is a well-hatched plan. I am a reformed schemer, and I decided never to stop, but I use that energy of being subversive in a way to elevate my ancestors, and then hopefully things will come out that will inspire other people. So, I run Untold RVA. This is actually, I have all these little things I want you guys to do when you get home that will help. Things that I figured out that if you could be 22 years old and do it now, it wouldn't take you until you're 44 like me. I wear my cards around my neck every single day. There's not a day I wake up for 5 years that I haven't worn these cards. This is the information on the back. Untold RVA is the people's choice for the creative advancement of the most powerful self-determination narratives that were hidden in plain sight. Is this okay? Do you guys need this? Not really. Okay. So this is the missing pieces in the historical narrative, right? So I designed this logo because of the fact that, for me, the number 1111 is very important. I don't know in your cultures if you've ever heard people say, oh, it's 1111, why am I seeing this all the time? Make a wish. Well, to me, that's the time when the portal is open. My friends call me the Oracle Portal. And so this hashtag is actually an 11 and an 11. And the space in the middle is occupying the space of the ancestors, where they can come through and help us with our work. So you may come from a whole long line of some complete tyrants, assholes, and people that you don't want to hold space for, but that doesn't mean that there weren't people who were in your bloodline that you never heard of, because it's always the stories of the best and brightest that get pushed down. We probably won't be celebrated. Unless we celebrate them, no one will celebrate us. It's like a continuum. So you have to hold up that which holds you up. So there might have been an aunt in your family that everyone called crazy. That's your person. So even if you don't know her name, be like, known, unknown, known, seen and unseen, I call on the names of my ancestors. Please come and help me in this moment. Commune with my friend's ancestors as well, and hold space in the other realm so we can all get our work done. And then you'd say, Ashe, or may it be so. So if I say Ago, you're going to say that to me, Ame. That's in West African spiritual system language. It's a vibration, so you're opening up a portal when you say Ashe. Ashe?
Ashe.
Right, that means that we're all on the same page with that. And then if I say Ago, you say back Ame. So I'm going to say Ago, and then you say Ame back. Ago means, are you listening? Can you hear me, like, with your heart and soul? And then you say Ame, which means you hear me from your heart and from your soul. Ago.
Ame.
Ago.
Ame.
Ago.
Ame.
Ashe. See what I'm talking about? Man, this circle is hot now. All right, so this is Richmond that you're looking at. I really am delighted to be here, first of all, the opportunity to connect with each of you, because, like, we were born at the same time for a reason, so thank you for being in the world at the same time as little old me. This is Untold RVA's creatively disrupt. Didn't I tell you I was a disruptor, too? I am, in a bad, terrible way. I'm terrible. My handle on Twitter is FreeTurbo with a U. Turbo. Anyway, Untold RVA creatively disrupts continued efforts to deliberately submerge Richmond's historical resistance narratives. So you may not consider yourself to be a historian, but if indeed you're doing any kind of justice work, you will be strengthened if you have your ancestors on the front line. Our ancestors are our first line of defense, so it's very important that you develop a relationship with those that were before you that were doing that very same work. And the relationship simply comes down from, what were they doing, do I know it, and do I tell people about it every chance I get? That's Simba Simbi, hold up that which holds you up. So I live in this city, Richmond, Virginia, on the East Coast, and it is the capital of the Confederacy. It's the place where they decided they were going to set up a whole nother country within a country during the Civil War. And they subjugated black folks like no tomorrow there. But it happened, I mean, even here, I was walking in the basement here, and I saw a Confederate flag on the wall. I was like, what? I thought I was away from that. And they were just speaking to the 2 months that the Confederates actually came out here and subjugated the people and forced them to be under their occupation. But then I think they got ran out, so it wasn't very long. But they made sure to commemorate that time with a little 2 month little snap on the wall. And I was just like, man, I got work to do even now. I can't even rest. But okay. So one of the things that I want to do for a little bit of housekeeping is that I want you guys to be as vigilant as I am about protecting people and your own intellectual property. So if you have no resources to be able to develop like a kitchen where you can like, you know, feed people and do all these cool things that cost a lot of money, the one thing you do have is you have your ideas, and they are extremely valuable. If you want to holler at me, I'll teach you how to set up a speakers bureau where you can go in and replace the consultants that come into your town and do that kind of work and self-fund your own projects. But that only happens if you know now to start protecting your intellectual property. So this is, I'm very big on glossary and lexicon and language and defining things from a self-determined lens, and I want you all to be the same way. So at the bottom of most of my slides, you'll see Untold RVA, because I want to encourage you to take these pictures, but if you separate the information from who told you, then you won't inspire any tall, 6 feet, 44-year-old fly chicks to be doing this kind of work, because they won't know that they can relate to that, you know. So please make sure to tell the whole story, not only what it is, but who it was that told you the thing, right? So I want to make sure that you all have people honor and protect your intellectual property, which I define as innovative content that is the result of self-determined creativity to which one has rights and for which one deserves both credit and compensation, i.e. give folks props where props are due, and i.e. don't bite or plagiarize other people's shit. So, Ashe?
Ashe.
Yeah, man, dang, it's easy. So, 3 axioms that Untold RVA is predicated upon. And you can take a picture of some of these slides if you want. Self-determination, it is basically the idea that you are going to accomplish what is in your soul to accomplish, regardless of whether or not you have the quote-unquote credential or not. I'm going to be next week in New Orleans presenting at the National Endowment for the Humanities, and I probably went to a year and a half of college. And I'm like a really serious historian in this country now. It's because I was born to do it. And there were blockages, and it doesn't matter. Why? Because I was self-determined. So all of you should definitely stand on the 3 principles I believe are the cornerstone of our work. Self-determination. And like if you call that number, you'll hear the definition and stuff. That's part of my work as well. Intersectionality, which means that there are people that were born in this world that you were meant to work with. That's the reason why I made that list, is because you should be finding people based on what it is that they represent and how they're pushing against systemic oppression. And so intersectionality, the people that you work with are probably in many ways going to be someone you wouldn't think you should be working with on face value. And those categories can be myriad. And then resistance. Oh, what happened? Free. Come back. Excuse me, guys. You kind of skipped. Okay. All right, and so resistance. Resistance are the narratives that some people would be like, oh, well, you know, she tried to go to college and she didn't make it. She failed. No, resistance is actually going to celebrate your even trying. The fact that you even, like, endeavored to attempt to break the cycle of the bullshit that you were born into. So that's your resistance narrative. And to me, you can celebrate a resistance narrative differently than you can if the world is meant to give a trophy to just one person and all that stuff. You guys understand, right? Resistance. So this is Untold RVA. This is my portal lab. We were actually in this picture. We were watching. No, that was a Zoom. That was a USDAC Zoom meeting right there. I have an outpost in Richmond. It was set up about commemorative justice. So this was like the first meeting, and everyone was looking at the like big screen over there. That's a map of the city. It really is yellow and black. Like it's not just a, yeah. So the USDAC outpost for Richmond is, like I said, about commemorative justice. Commemorative justice, here's the 5 principles of commemorative justice. It's guided by self-determination. Fist in the air if you're self-determined. Like, I know Mama Cato is, she's just not putting her fist in the air. She's busy. Okay. All right. Do you hatch plans collaboratively? Then you're on number two of being down with commemorative justice. Number three, is the work that you're doing, are you intending for to inspire future movements? Are you thinking about the fact that you are living in such a way that people will be standing on your shoulders? And are you making choices so that when they look into your work, they can't say, well, that dude is. Are you really living so that people can be proud of you in the future? That is inspiring future movements. Because you want to be on somebody's ancestor altar one day. They say people die twice. One day when they're no longer breathing, and the second day when no one remembers their name. I can guarantee to you, if you hold up the ones that came before you, somebody will be there to hold you up. It's just like something about the universe, right? And that means that you can also plant seeds in the world and you don't have to be around to see the fruits before, but you just know, I planted that seed, and it makes life have way more meaning. You're not gonna have like 60 or 70 or 80 or 90 years to do it. You'll have like the continuum of time. Number four, do you support frontline advocacy? Meaning, are you actually okay with being an innovator? Or do you have to kind of feel as though if it's already been done, you can get behind it? Some people just don't want to be the only one doing a thing. But if you're into commemorative justice as a tool to be able to undermine systems that you were born into, you've got to be okay with being an innovator. And number five, you should be empowering the next generation and the people that are around you as your peers. You should be elevating, meaning that you guys should really be looking at how can we take this to the next level at all times. You should never be satisfied with where you are. And you should be able to amplify other people that are like on this page. So your work should have a thread that runs through it so that it's like, people say kill two birds with one stone, but I had to come up with another word. So I built another word. It's called bring two birds to life with one biscuit. See, why are you killing birds? So don't be scared. You do not have to do what's always been done. You do not have to have the language of the oppressor to be able to go into your lexicon. For instance, when we talk about enslaved people, I never let people walk away from me saying the slaves. I'm like, no, wait a minute. They were enslaved. It was their condition. It wasn't their reality. That wasn't their identity. I would never say master. I mean, you know, no, they were human traffickers. You know, they were torturers. They were enslavers. They owned the plantation, but not the people, because we know you can't own people, right? So you can use other language. Also, what's the other one I was going to say? I can't remember right now. But anyway, these things are really important. Language matters. So this is a portal that I just built on 11-1, which was like 3 days ago, 2 days ago, on All Saints Day, yes. This picture in the center is of the ancestors that are important in my community. So we'll talk about more of what that is and what's on there in a minute. But so I built these structures and it cost a lot to get them done. And I'm gonna show you a film about what happened when I was in the process of building this. This is on NPR, National NPR. Ooh, hold on a minute. Okay, let's watch this. There's this space in Richmond, and it used to be the city hanging grounds back in the early 1800s. It also was given to enslaved people as a place to bury their dead. Nobody was caring about the history of this place. People were like, take your asphalt off my ancestors. To take responsibility for one's ancestors after they've passed is something that should be looked at with great honor. So I made all these signs because there was nothing.
The pavement has been taken off. It's a victory of the people, a self-determined effort. There's no one who can tell anyone going down there that you don't have the right to take care of your own ancestors. We do. Hi Rodney, my name is Ree Edmund Femi. I was calling you about the Truthful History Heals Monument Project. Is there anyone I can speak to about that this morning?
Sure, I'm trying to do the best I can.
Okay, well, he was curating that space. I had the opportunity to go to school on a full scholarship for violin, and I was classically trained violinist from the age of 2, ranked number 1 in the state of Virginia. Playing my violin on the golf course as the golfers ride by, my mother, play! I'm just like, oh my God. One day I realized my life is going to be gone before I live. I got to stop this. And then when I told my parents, they flipped out. I said, well, fine, I'm going to Virginia State. And that's when I went, never realizing that my ancestors were within a half a mile of my dorm, who had like been in the oldest free black community in the country. So as changing lanes, when I left Virginia State, I was really deeply rooted within black culture.
So this is the original sketch of the promo. I wanted to have the center image to represent the picture of the altar at my house.
This is the portal. And the portal shows all of these people on the ancestor altar. And we're putting them in locations where people can actually go there and learn about the people that are on here. His name is Farid Allen Shinsius. I used to see him around and be like, who is this dude? I knew that he was a carpenter. When I finally got a chance to meet him, I realized, you know, there was work for us to do.
Oh, she's a doer and I'm a doer.
You. I drew those portals out and showed it to him, and he came and brought that thing down to the canal, and I looked at it and I was in shock because it was exactly what I drew. We stand on the shoulders of our ancestors. You need to be able to know you're living in a city with people who pushed past and accomplished so much. There's no monuments to them. And their lives need to matter. I'm a fourth generation spiritualist. My mom didn't tell me that my whole family was African spiritualists, although she was raised this way from birth. All the way until the time she met my dad. She did not want me to take after that family dynamic. I thought I was striking out on my own, and all along, I was doing what our family had been doing for countless generations.
This sign explains to people how they would use the space. They come with an open heart and a willingness to do good.
My mom, when she passed 2 years ago, she was on her last moments on earth. I remember I started singing this song, and it's a song that you sing to open up the portal when a person is transitioning. It goes, Aumba Waori, Aumba Waori, Awa Osun, Awa Uma, Lady Uma, Leyawo. When I got to the end, I said, Ma, you want me to see you again? She goes, yes. You leave it to me, I'm not burying you in some crazy ass crypt. I said, you know, I'm going to be down here all the time. I would really rather just go ahead and inter some of my mom's ashes over there. When I come down there, my mom is overlooking the whole scene. Sharing that, you know what you gotta do, right? You have to sing for each other, you have to hold space for each other, you have to open up the portal for one another. Whenever any of us transition, we have to continue the work by remembering, calling out each other's names, and making sure that there's no breach within the continuity of existence in multiple planes on either side of the veil. So that's basically what commemorative justice is all about. Making sure that if we hold up those that came before us, it will become normalized within our justice work, that we all recognize that, like, it's not the end. Now, mind you, you might not be a person that believes in the spirit realm and all of this, but you do obviously recognize that history exists and that the things that happened in the past can inform the future. So it's not necessarily that you've got to be a spiritualist. The whole reason why I'm doing this through the lens of
commemoration is because people in the South don't really take kindly to other people talking about spirits that move across the veils and stuff like that. So I had to find this very bland way of being able to describe it because, you know, they do their ham biscuit thing in the South. It's just pimento cheese and ham biscuits. That's what we had. So I wanted to share with you one other thing. There's going to be movements that happened in the past that were deliberately submerged. And these are going to be things that are making a one-to-one connection with your work. So you will find that you've got commemorative justice work right under your nose. Let's see. So here is one of the principles of commemorative justice, specifically self-determined commemorative justice. I define it as being led by natural leaders. Does anyone feel like a natural leader?
Working towards it.
Does anyone not feel like a natural leader is the question. I think if you're in this room and you spent money to get here, then clearly you're not putting on. You actually took money away from being able to go to King's Dominion or Great Six Flags or something. So there's something in you that is calling you to doing this, so you're naturally attuned to being here. Don't let anybody tell you different. But it would be led by natural leaders who commit ourselves to the work of dismantling the historic inequities threatening authentic social progress. So even if you're not a person that collects former narratives in the form of doing work as a historian, whatever it is that you do stand on, please take time to find out who were the people that are left out of your local historical record that were doing that, and hold space for them. And so I look at all of you as part of what I call the conspiracy of good people, which is actually something that Charles Courant was speaking about. He was one of the founders of PBS, and my work has been definitely amplified by public media. But he said, I have faintly become aware that there is in this state and in this nation and in this world an association of men and women who, while they may not even know each other, might still be called a conspiracy of good people. We are that conspiracy of good people in this room right now, and we have no choice but to recognize each other's work because we all we got, baby. That's it. This is all we got. You know, this is all we got. Now, here, and us. So this is the conspiracy of good people that's known also as the USDAC outpost in Richmond. If you call 804-277-8116 and press 30#, you'll get a chance to hear how we do it. Like I said, public media has been a great tool of mine. I was embraced by the public media network, and I'm saying this to you because I really think that the public media can help amplify what you have going on. Even if you're not into audio storytelling, it can be a very strong ally and asset to being able to amplify the work that you're doing, especially if you can connect what you're doing now with people who have done it in the past that have been deliberately submerged. So before we go into that, I would like to share with you the NPR piece that was done in connection with that series, Finding America.
Support for NPR and the following message come from our sponsor, Capital One. Click here more to learn how Social Security numbers became prime targets for fraudsters. The CreditWise app by Capital One is designed to alert users to potential fraud to help protect their credit if personal information falls into the wrong hands.
As the nation prepares to inaugurate a new president, we've been getting glimpses of some of the communities he will soon lead. Our series is called Finding America. Today we go to Richmond, Virginia.
When people come to Richmond, it really feels like a history haven. First thing you see is a lot of restaurants, you see a lot of social entrepreneurships, you see a lot of boutiques, but I don't want people that look like me to be forgotten in the midst of that.
Historian Free Egunfemi worries that the history of Richmond's black community is getting lost. It's easy enough to find monuments celebrating Confederate history in Richmond. It's harder to find evidence of Richmond's role in the country's slave trade, unless you go underground, which is what Egunfemi and producer Kelly Libby did. A local restaurant employee led them into a basement that Egunfemi believes was used in the Underground Railroad.
So as we come down in this hole, this basement is actually part of Sweet Tea's restaurant, which is a
Black-owned soul food restaurant here in Chaco Bottom in this section of downtown Richmond, Virginia.
Hold your head down when you come down. Come on down.
In this basement, you'll find a very low ceiling. You'll find very old bricks.
Yep. Ouch.
But certainly the ability to understand what this space could have been like in the 1800s. Do you have a flashlight? There's boarded up and bricked up tunnels that were used in the Underground Railroad. So, being down here right now today feels so strong because I know that this was the last space in Richmond that many people actually occupied before they whisked themselves to freedom and started a new life in places like Philadelphia.
Okay.
Yes. This was something that I was able to uncover through conversations with the people that live and work here and digging for the untold story.
Did you hear about this when you first came? Did they tell you?
Richmond, Virginia is the nucleus of the slave trade in Virginia because there were at least 300,000 people that were gathered from all over the surrounding counties and brought to ships and sold down the river. That's actually the term that they used. Sold down the river to never see their families again. We are only a few steps from auction blocks on every corner of this area. They're not marked. There's no memorials. There's no signage. There's no remnants. There's no evidence. All of this stuff has been erased to time.
We have to show you up then.
Yeah. Richmond is a majority black city. There's more black people than any other background here in Richmond, Virginia, and our narratives have not been celebrated, nor have our accomplishments. This is something that I feel is very important to be told by the descendant community itself, to be held as a historical remnant of all we were able to accomplish when the city and the state and the nation had laws on the books that made us not be able to have life, liberty, or the pursuit of happiness like everyone else. So for my ancestors and for those that were enslaved here, tortured here, disrespected here, I say power to the people. May we never forget what this space represents for self-determination and self-liberation and all the things that go into people preserving their freedom. May it be so.
That's historian Free Edmund Femi in Richmond, Virginia. Her story was produced by Kelly Libby. It comes to us from Localore, Finding America, a national production of AIR, the Association of Independence in Radio. You can find more stories at NPR and at Finding America.
So then the final pivot that I want to make with you guys is to talk about this radio thing again. I can't tell you how important it is to be able to intersect with movements that are in existence to amplify. And if you happen to operate within one of those spaces, you may not necessarily have the stories to tell, but you may know how to broadcast and amplify those stories, right? So that means you have to connect with people that are doing the work right now. And if you're doing the work and you don't feel like you have very much support in your community, what better way to show people that this has actually been a thing all along? You're not hip. You could kind of gloat to people when you start digging out the hidden history and be like, you didn't know that we, it's empowering. You guys dig for the hidden history. You didn't know that women have been blah, 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 and ray, ray, ray. Like, what's wrong with you? I mean, it's, believe me, the fact that I could come into the city and tell the entire museum community about this Underground Railroad tunnel that I found that none of them knew about, and that I was on NPR talking about it was like, you know, so find the things that happened that were left on the cutting room floor, the things that were deliberately submerged. That is your superpower. The hidden history will take you there every single time. These are the things that they wanted nobody to know about, you know? So also, I will tell you, when you hit those patches where you don't have any evidence for what happened, but you just know in your soul that it happened, then that's when you can cross over into historical fiction. You can still do it, you can be speculative. So there is no place that you can't go where ancestry and history can't propel your movement. Let me show you a couple of more slides before we move on to our activity. Okay. So, commemorative justice 101. These are the things that you would want to employ for you to be able to weave commemorative justice into your own movement. First of all, you want to make sure that you're connecting with hidden history, because it's something about pulling the narratives that are already out that's not as empowering as finding ones that have been deliberately submerged. Number two, you want to make sure that you're looking for narratives that are about self-determination that you can amplify. So, you know, pretty much look for who was doing that kind of thing that you're doing now, because if you're not really getting much juice in your town, probably someone else wasn't either for quite some time. Number three, collaborate with street artists, because I don't know about you, but in my town we have issues with people putting up really psychotic imagery that looks like they were like straight up tripping on like the oldest LSD they found in their granddad's closet. And then it's like, what are you guys thinking? You could be doing so much more. Like, you have to tell people those narratives. Be like, I am a storyteller, let's just say, and I'm working with youth to be able to empower them so that they understand there's all these ways they can actually build a career around storytelling, and I need a mural about storytellers. And then you get someone, you tell them why, and you tell them a historical narrative that had been deliberately submerged, and you two partner together, and then you find your person that's a public media maker, a radio person, or an illustrator, and then the next thing you know, you have this three-way thing, and then it's like all this energy, all the following that they have with their amplification through radio, and all the amplification that comes from this person being a prolific artist or an emerging artist, and then you as the historian, and then the movement that you support, all of you are working together, and it's like this thing where all the intersection points come, and it's super strong, right? So don't try to do this by yourself, is basically what I'm saying. Number four, be very site-specific with your installations. That basically means find out what happened. Some people say placemaking, but I know Arlene is encouraging us to begin to use the word placekeeping, because, you know, things happened there already. It's just that people were trying to deliberately submerge it. It's part of gentrification to be like, oh, we're going to make this coffee shop here and make it be a thing to come here. Well, no. I mean, there was already something there, right? So you guys can laugh. I try to be funny because I'm really tired. And we just ate that awesome food. But anyway, the fifth one is to expand your audience with social media. So create content that's not going to be long-form podcasts. Media makers, everyone doesn't have 45 minutes to listen to your spiel. So you can do it in 5 seconds, I promise. You can drop a bomb in 5 seconds. You can. We already talked about this. Local hidden narratives are powerful and deeply transformative. So dig into what's going on in your city. And then find a way, you know what, it might just be a thing where you find people that are investing in supporting movements with their blood, sweat, equity, you know, and their tears and their elbow grease and their grit. And then you can, maybe on your off time, just dig around a little bit online and find out if there's a story that you can bless them with and be like, you know, I saw that you're like really into this whole, you know, food justice thing, but did you know that there was a lady that actually lived on this block in 1890 and she ran a soup kitchen and stuff, and it was a place where people organized a union or something? I mean, I'm totally pulling this out of the universe, but I'm saying, there's a reason why I'm saying this. This actually is somebody's story. And so you can support that person, and if you're a media maker or your friend is, be like, I have this narrative and there's this lady doing this work and let's put this together. And then give it away for free, but find somebody to sell it to, because you're gonna need that money to push your next project. Word? I should. Okay, so this is the last video I wanna share with you. This guy right here is a descendant to Robert E. Lee, who was the Confederate general from the Civil War. We have this big statue in the middle of the city, which is of Robert E. Lee. At the time they put the statue up, Robert E. Lee had been dead for like, I don't know, some 20 some years, 30 years. And at the time when he was the Confederate general, he had renounced his American citizenship, as did all Confederates. So the idea that you would have a statue to a secessionist that tried to undermine the whole fabric of the United States and that you're bragging about this, and then the promenade of houses that are all through there, I live probably 8-10 blocks away from this. The idea of this is just ludicrous that we would even be talking about why we should have that up and stuff. But we're dealing with it. So this guy, he works at Al Jazeera, and he goes, "Free people told me I really should talk to you." And I'm a direct descendant of Robert E. Lee, and I want to be able to do this thing. I work for Al Jazeera internationally, and can I do something to fix this? I've come all the way from the Middle East. His name is James Gannon. And so let's see what I was able to do with James Gannon.
What statue do you know is talking back to you? None of them do. It's a way to disrupt the inherent racism in the commemorative landscape. I have these installations. I print them out, I repaste them with flour, sugar, and water. I have a telephone number. You call it and you can hear information. You walk by like a pole or anything in the city and you see one of these, you actually get to hear hidden history. It's called tactical urbanism. It's when you use guerrilla street art to push back against the monuments. It's not a construct of, you know, the black community for us to worry about statues when we have real babies that are having real challenges. So that's why I came up with this way to put it on paper.
I think it wiser not to keep open the sores of war, but to follow the example of those nations who endeavored to obliterate the marks of civil strife, to commit to oblivion the feelings engendered. Believe it or not, those are the words of Robert E. Lee, the man on top of the biggest statue on Monument Avenue. I'm James Gannon, a descendant of his cousins, and I couldn't agree more. My ancestors enslaved people. They inflicted wounds on societies that are still not healed today. I'm not responsible for their actions, but my life does intersect with this statue and the duty for everyone to create a more just world. In my mind, that means statues that stand for oppression have to be committed to oblivion. May the collective work of this untold RVA, Keepers of the Light Street Art Project, inspire generations. Power to the people, and may it be so.
Thank you, sir. We're going to make sure that everyone has, you know, a democratic way to receive this information and contribute to the reclamation of these narratives that would have been left out deliberately, actually.
Word up, right? Yeah, world, can you hold up that which holds you up? So that just came out last Sunday. So that's brand new. And BBC is coming to do a story as well. Like, they're coming, man, because you do what you're supposed to do. It's like the work is done for you in the ancestral realm on the other side. I'm telling you, there's no reason for Al Jazeera to be trying to ask me anything except for the fact that it was written and destined for it to happen. It's the same thing for you. I'm confident of it. All right, and so let's go back and talk about
what statue do you know is talking back to you?
They don't. All right. So there's James, there's the Monument Project. These are like the smaller ones. They are sometimes large format, these wheat paste installations. So another thing, when you're designing your logos, because you know, when you want to be able to use public art and stuff like that, sometimes I would encourage you to, I mean, it's not something that I developed. I just used to always try to take posters off of like old school native tongue hip hop back in the day and like try to peel it off and it wouldn't come off the wall and I'd be like, this poster, why won't it come off? and it was wheat paste. It was like a piece of paper that you boil flour, sugar, and water, and then stick it up, and then use it as a glaze, and it can't come down. Right, so it's not like just a poster that they use staples or something. That's wheat paste, and so these are what I use to put up these installations. If indeed you're interested in being able to employ this technique in your city, especially since this number 804-277-8116, and I have up to 5,000 entries. So I've got like 130 installations all over the city now, but I can help you do that. It's something that I consult, and we can talk about that later so that you can use this this technique to build up the hidden history in your town. So let's talk about the juxtaposition within traditional monuments that are supposed to be holding up ancestors we can be proud of, but using the techniques of the Gilded Age and of the oppressor's whole consumer model. So this is Maggie Lena Walker. This is her memorial. Maggie Lena Walker was born the year before the end of enslavement in Richmond, Virginia. She was the very first woman bank president in the United States. Not just black, like the first lady president known a bank was Maggie Lena Walker, I show you. So the thing about her is that there was no commemoration for a statue of her. So this is the corner of Adams and Broad, and it's right in the middle of the city, and it took 20 years and $1.2 million in order to get this statue up. And the whole time I didn't want to stop these beautiful old people, these elders and their grandchildren and stuff that were raising money to get this. But I kept saying there's got to be another way. Like, we have way too many narratives to tell, and if we're relying on taking $1.2 million to get up every single one of these. I mean, and then plus the fact that they don't talk back to you, right? We just saw that. So I wanted to use this tactical urbanism with the wheat paste to be able to augment what they were doing for the unveiling of this last year. Excuse me, it might have been the year before last. Anyway, no, it was last year. It was last summer, last June. So the Magdalena Walker Memorial has six words around the base of it: mother, teacher, publisher, business owner, entrepreneur, and civil rights worker. But there was no context for what those things were. So when you come visit it, it's like, okay, I know these things, but I don't really have any details about it. So when they were getting ready to unveil it, I was like, you know what, ancestors, I need wall space. But I didn't know where to go. And so one of the elements that I'm sure you've seen is a candlelight vigil, right? You guys have seen it. Every time someone that is loved by their community passes away, someone lights a candle, puts it on the floor. This is Dia de los Muertos time. You can see the altars that are everywhere. And so I was like, please give me like some sign of how, where am I going to be able, what is my structure? What am I going to use in the built environment to get these up? And so I was driving across this bridge and I looked and I saw these street lamps. I'm like, they're giant candles. Oh my God. So that's when I realized I need to build a project which turned into the Keepers of the Light. So if you look, there's a little candle in the bottom. So light poles are beautiful at the bases of them. They're all exactly the same. They have four faces. They're easy for you to be able to put something right on the bottom. So that's what I do now all around the country. So holla at your girl, I'll help you. Anyway, so this is a light pole here as well. You see that it didn't really have that base, so I kind of put it on that little pole part. But anyway, so this is what they look like. These are going from the Maggie Walker statue two blocks. And so for each one of those axioms, each one of those words to her attributes that they carved in stone, I have an installation, number 22, if you call that, it'll tell you about her as an entrepreneur. Then I got with a friend that is a woodcutter. He makes woodcuts. And he built this about Maggie Lena Walker before I even found any reason to do this project. He'd already built this woodcut. And so that's why I say have friends that are artists. It's an intersectional movement. I wouldn't have been able to do all of that. And then I'm a designer, but I'm not like the greatest in terms of being able, how do I make a trapezoid? Like, you know what I'm saying? So I have friends that are like deep, went to college for designing. So I was like, you know, let me throw them some cash and we'll all get it done. So it was a collective effort. In being able to tell those narratives, you can tell about deliberately submerged stories. Like this right here, these are people that right after enslavement were chilling. This is like a picnic on the weekend, right after the end of enslavement, one generation out. No one's gonna tell that story in your city. No one's gonna tell about prosperity and young innovation in times gone by. If that's what you want, is to encourage young people to be prosperous and thrive. Someone said thrive was there. Yes, that's huge. I'm saying we have to move past survival, but if you don't realize that we've been thriving all along, then you'll see it as an unattainable goal. But so these imagery, like I'm putting these pictures like this onto just bricks, because everybody isn't, I'm not gonna have a wall space for everything. So you just take a little brick and you print it out that big and just repaste it, keep it moving. Now, you will, you know, stoke the rage of your political adversaries in your town, I promise you will. But if you do it in such a way that you have three or four, maybe even five intersecting organizations, or not even as much organizations, just people, you know, no one's gonna bother you. As a matter of fact, you'll be on the front page of the Al Jazeera, so trust me, it'll be okay. But you can't do it alone, I think that's the point. Oh, and then let me tell you why I use the red, black, and green and everything. Red is for the blood of our people. All people have blood, right? Black. Black is for the black girl magic, black boy joy, black excellence, the melanin, you know, all the stuff everybody wants but everyone can't have. And then the green is for our land, Mama Africa, where all human beings come from. So if you recognize that you're a human being, you can hold up the red, black, and green flag in honor of those of us who, this is our national identity. I'm not saying put one on the back of your pickup truck. What I am saying is that when you see me fly, it'd be like, yeah, that's that shit. Yeah. So, find your own lane and represent, and don't be ashamed about it. Stay in your lane respectfully. Don't try to do all the things. That's nothing worse than somebody who's like, I can do that, I can do that, I can do that. And you're not doing anything well. You're just kind of taking up space, and then no one can actually like take time because everyone's trying to like grab. Stay in your lane. The best thing to do is just like whatever it is that you're doing well, then find a historical example of that having been done, and then find folks that want to support that with you. We can, we will get it right. Power to the people. May it be so. If you want to talk with me later, or if you just want to be friends, or if we can hatch a plan together, I'm at free@untoldrva.com. And now for the writing exercise. This is why we wrote these words up here. Because we are creating something of a manifesto for what commemorative justice means. And I believe that this room is going to be, thank you, this room is going to be the catalyst for identifying exactly what commemorative justice should and could be. The reason I say that is because there's some reason why you're in here. Like you chose to have to act. And so I'm just going to say it in a way so that you can hear it differently than when we first said it. Okay? Commemorative justice? Wait a minute. Thank you. We're gonna do it a different way. When your name, hopefully you can see your name on here. I'll even call it out, okay? And then what I want you to do is I want you to say your thing, and I want you to say how that's going to forward this telling of hidden historical narratives and the presentation of this so that we can then see how we all can create. I'm not explaining it as well as I need to, but I'll kind of use mine as an example, okay? We'll take it from there. I'm Free Eglin Femi. And typocracy is how I'm pushing against systemic inequity. And so with commemorative justice, I want everything that we push out to be designed really, really well with Helvetica all the time. Most of the time. Now Ty said fashion. What about you? How can I contribute to commemorative justice?
By bringing back our ancestral cultures, I do modeling, and my thing is that westernizing has been a part of my family, and the fact that we have to present differently than what our roots are, and being like wearing jewelry that's too flamboyant or wearing like earrings that are shining actually represents in my culture your beauty, your class, your style, and bringing that back and embodying more of it. And the more I grow, the more comfortable I feel in embracing that. Maybe people who look like me might feel like there's more options of how to represent themselves.
Fantastic. So you're saying the historical roots of people having long ago been adorned.
Like the nails, like those, the nails that people get at salons used to be African, like the long claw nails, the braids we get, it's in our roots, it's in our culture. The more that we embrace it, the more we love our hair and just like let it be out, the more little kids will feel the need to be bald headed.
So you promise you're going to
uphold
that in the historical sense?
I'll do my best to keep on improving.
Thank you.
That is what I
Thank you. Thank you. coming?
I'm using Olelo to find culture that has been lost due to oppression and bring it out. Olelo is language. I'm using traditional language to as a key to unlock histories that have been lost due to oppression.
Thank you. Ashe. Sarah, stillness.
I'm using stillness as a way of unlearning toxic patterns of valuing productivity or speed that have been such part of destruction of people and planet, and instead operating from a place of stillness and groundedness so that when action comes, it comes from a source of truer wisdom.
Will you go into the past and find examples of that when you're sharing with people that it just didn't become a thing that only Sarah's talking about?
Yes.
Especially. Stephanie in design.
I'm using design. I partner with artists around the world in a poster format, which is one of the simplest ways to get your message across. So I'm using design on different human rights topics and how somebody across the world could be experiencing the same thing that we're experiencing here, and by connecting those issues and finding the commonality. And so I think we have a lot of shared history.
Will you, when you're designing, consider using imagery from the past?
Yes, absolutely.
I should. You know, I've asks for all of you, plugging a little bit history. Kelsey, in listening.
I'm creating platforms for voices that are far too often ignored, and needing to lead by example by stepping off the center stage and actively listening to other people's stories.
Ashley, will you share where the origins of active listening? Will you dig as far deep into the past? Thank you, Ashley. Kento.
Yo.
Joy.
Yeah, well, you know, they're always trying to suck the joy out of us. Mm-hmm. You know, regardless of whether you're black, white, male, female, gay, straight. You know, nobody wants to be happy. Mm-hmm. Even though everybody says, oh, I just want to be happy. Then be happy. Take your job.
Will you allow people to, sometimes when they don't see if there's anything to be happy about, we take them back to the times when we celebrate, so they can know that this is not just a thing you're saying, but we've been doing this, we are joyful people.
Yes.
Jane and simplification.
Imposter syndrome of feeling like you don't belong. And so one of the biggest problems that I encounter is with programmers, these bros that are like, oh yeah, I know CSS, HTML, and PSQL, TLBD. Like, do you know what I mean? And it's like, I'm like, hold on a minute. Like, I don't need your alphabet soup. Like, let's actually like talk about what each of these things is. And actually like put it into like simple terms, because at some point everyone didn't know all of those letters.
Will you remind people that women have been teaching the babies as the first nurturers, and that complicated things don't make sense, and you can't even raise a nation without investing in the youth, and that we get it more than the programmers do?
I mean, the first computer was a loop.
Right? Wow.
Ooh.
David and ritual.
Yeah, ritual, I think, is a way for me to decolonize time and make me remember all of the past and the future that is in the present. And this presentation really inspired me to represent that more visually. I've been doing it in a time-based, but creating the space also to, not only for me, but also for the public to remember.
Would you be willing to share with people the steps upon how to create simple ritual and hold on poster in a visual way at some point so they can see it and make it publicly accessible?
Yes.
Thank you. I feel so accomplished right now. All these things helping to happen in the world that you guys are helping me to continue doing on my end too. Thank you. Alan and Unlearning.
Oh, wow. History is already such a part of it for me to remember that beneath all the things that we grow up being taught, and if we're put through the education system, the schooling system, all the things that we have to actually make an effort to unlearn later on in life, just remembering some sort of deeper humanity before all that. I do as much as I can try to bring us back to all of the examples of small communities of self-directed, self-organized learners, but whenever we're doing that, to remember that we can.
That's wonderful. Will you please become friends with James so you guys can take it to the simple step?
Yes.
And unlearn it all the way back to the basic?
Yeah.
Can you guys?
Absolutely.
Hey, Asheo. Me like you. All right. Eric, surrealism.
Hey. So right now I'm working on a project trying to mix up norms and show them or interrogate them and take them into a place where they can be destabilized and stuff like that, specifically whiteness and male dominance. And my medium is video and film, so that's what I'm working on.
You promised me to work on taking those definitions of surrealism and decolonization and all those things that you just said, that buzzwords. Can you put together a short video that's like 5 seconds or 10 seconds long and just flood it on the internet and send me a copy so I can share it and all of us so we can understand how those terms and concepts can intersect with our work?
Yes.
You will do it?
5 second video.
They can be little. They don't have to be like, they can be time. They can be 10 seconds, 15, but stuff that people can actually digest quickly.
Yes.
Asheo. Yes. Wow. Yes, thank you. And then share it to USDAC so we can all get to it.
Okay.
Thank you. See, all you have to do, my mom said, if you don't ask, you don't get. So that's why I'm asking for all these kids. All right, ancestor veneration from Umeme.
I mean, I feel like you just everything, like, okay, I don't know what to say.
Yeah, because you feel like you're in, like, home space now. It's like, what can I say? Well, let me ask you a question. Do you think that you can share with people what we did today, the people that already you work with in terms of ancestral veneration, so that you can make the audience wider than just people that are coming through that lens that we're in, and simplify it and make it in a digestible way, mm-hmm. and strengthen it with history,
yes.
in your town, so it's local and then it also reaches back to the continent and it honors and elevates our ancestors?
Yes.
Can you do that?
Yes. And can you promise me that we can connect? I started an email, so I'm like, can I wear one of your tags?
Don't ask, don't get. Yes. Yes. Ashe. So now we're at Jake in writing.
Where's Jake? I just wrote a book that's at a publisher, and it was literally a woman who I felt like her history had to be told. She's a civil rights activist, a Black Panther person who worked with Stokely and SNCC and Marion Barry and Jesse Jackson when they just came out of the movement. She passed away, but I promised her that I would finish the book. I finished it. It's at a publisher. So for me, that was hidden history. I'm going to continue working on projects that come out of that story. I'm also a journalist, so I have a lot of opportunities to
to do this kind of work, but this was great because you are so freaking creative and you just kind of like, I started working with video for the last few years, and I've been doing these videos with dolls for voting, a voting project. And this is making me think, huh, you know, I can take a lot of these ideas and sort of like move them more into the history, you know, and it doesn't just have to be dolls in the, for voting in the Millennium Project, which is what I, but sort of like taking some of this hidden history and using the doll videos. So this is great. Thank you. You're brilliant.
Very brilliant.
Well, you have to still make that promise. I don't think you can just flatter me. So here's the promise I have for you. For each one of the women that you have reclaimed the narrative of, will you promise me to get a small candle that's electric, with a little, like a little teeny one, and name a doll after the women in the narratives that you find,
yes,
and set them up and keep the light on all the time? And when you look over there, can you say, thank you for all you've done?
Get an electric light.
A little teeny little tea light candle from the Dollar Tree. You get 10 for a dollar.
She was leaving. Yeah, right? You don't want to say altar.
I didn't know if she was going to go, and make a doll for her.
I got you if you need help.
Yes, will you help her, please?
Yes, if you need help, I definitely get
you. So you promise that you two will work together on this?
Actually, I could make you some candles. You don't even have to get the little...
I didn't want her to burn the house down. If she don't know how to run candles.
Right.
She may have a cat. But y'all will work on that?
Yes.
Ashe. Okay. See, this is commemorative justice all across the country. Who's from not the United States? Who lives elsewhere outside of the United States? Well, you're not from here. But you... If you could just tell somebody... Okay, this is the room ask. Can you tell somebody who's not in America that we did this and what you're doing to forward commemorative justice? Can you do that? Room? Ashe?
Ashe.
So now we just went international with commemorative justice at USDAC.
Yes.
I'm talking about. Okay, Leslie and facilitation. That's Leslie, yes.
I mostly do like peer facilitation, so with other young people.
I'm sorry.
I can speak up. My voice is going in and out, so I'll try my best. So I mostly do like peer facilitation with other young people, and we do like social justice, political education, and also like learn about community organizing. And a lot of the work we do is we try to bring in like historical social movements, because that was like something that for me, I was like, oh, like organizing is a thing that we've always done and that's always happening. That's like literally how like people get free and how we've always been doing that. And so, I don't know, that's something I think about a lot. And I feel like facilitation to me is just like having conversations and like inspiring each other to be better.
Yes. So do you think that it would be all right if I asked you to find someone in your city who was the youngest person to have made the most impactful contribution in a way that you can relate to and tell the babies every chance you get? Yes?
Yeah.
Ashe. Now you went into a whole other generation with it, okay. See? Gosh, the scope is wide now. All right, thank you. So who's next? Rebecca and Duality.
I do writing, and then I also do some sort of work in the community right here, because I'm from here. But I think duality, what I was trying to say, was to try to encompass every part of a thing, not just sort of the straight and narrow, sanitized, nice part, to try to encompass history like you were talking about. So that's what I continue to
do. You know, I have a question.
Yes.
I want to ask you for something.
Yes.
Would you please work with him and to find that so he can make you one of those?
Yeah.
To share it? Will you work with him and make you one in your series?
I need
to. Ashe. Did you say yes?
Yes.
Did you say yes? Hey! Hey, that's what I'm talking about. Yes. Thank you. Erin, Clay.
Yeah. I've been playing with Clay as anti-capitalist action, and as like a means of fostering relationship and intimacy and tenderness, not just with other specific human individuals, but the more human world. And I've recently started researching different cultural examples of gift economies.
Guess what I'm going to ask you? Guess what I'm going to ask you to work with that lady right there? Can you accept me? Can you make a poster for her that says to not forget to take time to play? And send it to her, and you've got to learn how to weed paste, but you could call me. It could even be text. But can you put it in a place where people that are working on social justice would be? And make sure to remind us that we've got to take time to have fun. Can you do that? It could be a sticker. It could be a card around your neck. You just wear them, and she can make it for you. You just hand it and be like, don't forget to play. Or whatever it is you guys come up with the slogan. But I don't want that to stop in this room. We need to remember that. To play with play. You do that? You have to get good information for each other now. Just say. All right, you have all these witnesses that you promised. All right, thank you. And they're making a recording of this, though. We all have to do all these things. Tanner and his body. Her body.
Nice.
His body, yeah. Their body.
I guess I use the decisions I make about my body as like a way to embody I use my body to build things and like alter space to kind of try to reclaim that space and make it what it needs to be for whatever needs to occur. And I dance in public, I guess, and all over the place to kind of like, I think it just feels like all three of these things is a way to sort of like remind myself and that all the rules and restrictions about like how we are and what we're supposed to be doing are kind of imposed and not actually natural.
I want you to know that the things that I'm asking you to do are not coming from my mind. They're literally being told to me to ask you. So what I wanted to ask you, do you think that you could create a movement that allows a person to get into the space of being grateful for the shoulders that they stand upon? And when you come into rooms, that you just convene it by getting everybody on one page, by letting that move in. I don't know if it's this, this, whatever it is, but can you work on giving us that so the next time we see each other, we know how to create and hold space for commemoration in the ancestral realm? Can you work on that until next time we see each other? That's even better. Even better. Ashe. Thank you. Who's next? Aisha and Haikin.
Yeah, I think I commemorate the people of fearless before me who were hiking up and down, who were just adventuring out, so I can remember them. I'm hiking myself, being outdoors.
Can you go to the oldest person that you know that's a hiker and promise them that you won't forget them and that you're going to tell people about their work and make them feel secure in knowing that their story's not going to get lost, even when they transfer to the other side? You can. Find the old lady. I don't know who it is, but there's an old person over 70 that you may know or may meet in the future that was that chick you just described, and help her know that she won't be forgotten. We'll call out her name. And the next time we see each other, let me know so that I can call her name out too, and all of us can. Can you do that? Yes? Ashe?
Ashe.
I know it's hard pressure for me to get you guys to say this, but I want to be able to walk away with us being able to all have a task to do, because it's the sweat equity and that energy that makes these things. It's the velocity. It's the fuel. You have to put some skin in the game. So I don't mean to pressure you, but I mean to pressure you. Mm-hmm. You know? Radical responsibility person.
So radical responsibility, the processes of coming into staying in the right relationship.
Speak up so we can get...
Staying and coming into right relationship with the land and indigenous peoples of the land and people of color and all, life. And doing so through commemorative justice, in, I guess,
teaching about queer history in a way that lifts up yeah, hidden histories, and right now working on that, rethinking things taken, Thanksgiving toolkit to challenge some of those narratives. And then in my writing about histories of the ways that European descent folks resisted becoming a part of white supremacy, the settler state.
That's a lot of stuff. That's the greatest. I love it. So, would you be willing to share with the USDAC your toolkit so we can figure out how to do that for each of us if we need to? Can't have too many toolkits. Because that's where, you know, you find out how to present what you've learned to other people. This should not be self-aggrandizing work. It should be sharing. Can I get to the point where you guys take over the commemorative justice talk and I get to listen? It should be. So I'm trying to share and get you guys to put in on this as much as possible. Thank you, Brooklyn. So you are going to share it with the USDAC so we can see what you came up with. Asha, thank you. All right, we've got, is it Jiva? Yes, Jiva, storytelling.
So I hold space for folks to kind of connect to their own story and then support structure so that they can tell that story in a way that will resonate with other people and build collective action together. And lately, that has meant a lot of working with undocumented folks to kind of shift narratives of service and victimization and that kind of thing, and shift to more like collective power and support within the community. And then thinking a lot lately about the ways that historical trauma and current oppression and visionary futures all work together. So.
That's awesome. Do you think it would be okay if I asked you to speak to those people whose narratives you're sharing and ask them in their recording if they will say the name of someone that was in their ancestral lineage or in their family that they respected, and hold that name up so that when people are listening to their story, they're also hearing about the person whose shoulders they stand on, and make that part of your recording. You'll do it? You'll do it. Yes, thank you, Ashe. Thank you. Pascal, ceramics.
Bring something I heard you say earlier that really struck me was around speculative fiction as a way of acknowledging histories, stories, perhaps not seen but felt.
Yes.
And are there any other speculative fiction sci-fi nerds in the room? So as a ceramic artist, let me ask, is anyone else reading A.K. Jemisin, Broken Earth trilogy? As a ceramic artist, I make with clay elements from sci-fi stories and writers who I think offer me the people lessons for building more liberated futures, or futures that arise. And those objects that I make become kind of ways that I can have conversations with other people about what I'm learning.
So here's my question for you. Do you think before it's all over with, and your hands may be too gnarled to be able to continue to do this, so I'm gonna give you a long window to get this done, basically, until you're like 90, right? But is it okay if you make a piece that's speaking to the person inside of you, directly telling you what it is that you should make? Because although I wanna see the things that you're translating from other people's imaginations as well, I want to hear what your speculative artistry is speaking also. I'm fascinated by you. I'm fascinated. First of all, my daughter's named Pascal too. And you're the first person I met when I came here. And so I want to hear and see what the guiding light inside of you would have you build and make and do. Is that something that you can add to your list of things while you're on the earth? Ashe. You have a long window to accomplish yours. So, only because of the namesake thing, I'm being easy. Thank you, Pascal. I think the next person is Jonathan with an O and running.
First off, I gotta say, wow, there's a reason why you're on NPR, the reason why your voice is out there, because of your ability to even hear what we're saying, whatever source is helping you paraphrase that, put it back out there. Like, you have a gift with words, and it is very powerful. And, you know, I think that that's, with that, I'm sitting here trying to struggle on how I would describe the depth of running as simply as you are able to share this information that we're doing. So I want to honor your words, because it's powerful.
I know what I'm going to ask you. My knees hurt. Can you run for me? I'm so serious. That feeling that you get when, dude, man, I thought I was done. I thought I was going to be able to finish without the tears. Got me. But can you run for me? When you're running, whatever that feeling is that you get, can you just think about me? And I'll get it through the ether. Can you run for me?
And I want to share for us what running means in our community. It started as a way for us to come together. And upon layer, upon layer, upon layer, it's not just like the exercise, getting out there in your gym clothes and run. It's we're as Native people. Yes, if you live in the United States, I would say we live in the occupied states of America.
I see.
And for us, our running, we meet every week, and it's not just running, it's running and walking. It's whoever the slowest person is who's there. Mamas with strollers, our elders, young people, whether it's just the young folks, kids come out on their bikes, but we're there. We haven't missed a Monday since 2015. And that's another part, is being consistent and showing that we can be strong, be solid. Mm. And so we come together, and as we've been doing that, we've been learning about other things too, about the act of what they call bilateral movement, running or walking, what that does as far as processing trauma on the brain. So we're healing. And through that, we're actually, our runners are going all over the place. We have ceremonial runs. We just had runners come back from the Modoc ancestral run, where the Modocs, they held off the army, but Captain Jack and the other leaders at the end of that were all hung. And so this particular year, our relatives up there at Modoc, they actually started the run where Captain Jack was hung. And they started that run as a healing run to redirect the narrative into something new. We've been part of the Makahiki run, which is the Ahapule Aina Holo, the run in Hawaii that helped unify Big Island to stop the telescope, which is now kind of on the Supreme Court. Just last week, we gave the green light for that telescope, so our relatives are preparing out their run now too. So it's a movement thing, and we're learning every day some new level of what running means to our people. Mm.
Last night when we were together at supper, do you think that our friend that was at the table with us, they must know each other, no?
Maybe.
What is his name?
I don't remember.
Is there someone else here from your community today?
Well, we have, there's six of us here.
Okay, it must be.
He was a runner. He ran, like, he talked about an 8-month run through, like, Central America.
His girlfriend, maybe, Emily, maybe?
You remember?
I'm not sure.
I don't know if I wanted that to be the name anymore.
Well, he said that his girlfriend was the, because the women were organizing the last run, and that he supported her. I think it's got to be. I mean, you all have a very similar spirit, and I'm grateful. Did you guys gain from that share?
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know what to get. But if you could think about the fact that Free's doing this work, lift me up when you're running.
We're about Free. That's one of the things we do. We love praying.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I think we're at Borealis in queerness.
I like the emotional conferences because it's...
I know, it's not your fault. I feel the same. I was crying a second ago, but I snatched it in. But you don't have to.
Didn't try.
I like the ones my eye makeup.
So queerness has been my entry into disruption, and nonconformity generally has been my way of dealing with the world that I'm in. But something of the many genius things that you said around having a continuum of time on your side, I think for me, queerness has been an anchor for exploring and understanding histories that I would have never explored, and the youth work that I do now and for the future. So I guess that's the only thing about that.
So then you'll probably do well to ensure us all that you're going to find historical narratives of people that were queer when it was even harder to be that and contribute way back then. So the people that are dealing with things now in that space realize that they're not alone and that people have been in this space before and it's going to be okay. And that we'll remember them and those that are alive now, you know? You probably, I don't know, do you know of some historical narratives that are connected to queerness?
Yes, and I can't talk right now.
That's okay, but all I ask you to do is to continue in the work that you're doing and make sure that the youngest ones know of those narratives as well. Can you do that also? Hey, Ashaya. Thank you, Borealis. I would love to know what y'all are writing down that's supposed to be so brilliant, because it's not really me talking. This is major, you know. I won't remember any of this when I snap out of it. J-Wo and thriving.
I kind of feel
speak up, J-Wo.
I guess, like, being who I am and living the life that I've chosen slash have to live, I'm not supposed to be successful or thrive in that happiness and joy. Yeah, I'm not supposed to have community and love around me or dance publicly or look the way I do comfortably in society. But you know, fuck that. I'm gonna do it. So
Hello, Jocelyn. Can you also make one that says you have the right to thrive and slide it on over there? And you can print it out and do whatever it is you want to do with it, obviously, but make sure you stick it in places that a whole lot of people can see. Okay, can you do that?
Okay.
Yeah. We have a couple seconds left. Can we go on just a few?
Yeah, they have to do a room change. They have so to do the a guys room are change. Out here ready to
They're
do
ready? Okay, I'm going to go fast. We got 1, 2, 3, 4. All right, theater, Erica.
My company, I, as a theater artist, we make work about and for the community and with the community. And we've gone from a studio practice art to more of social practice art, using the stories, interviews, verbatim dialogue. And we work with different communities using our toolbox, whether we're making a play about an issue or we are just having a conversation about the issue. We use theater to do that act.
Will you hold space for people to honor and remember those that came before them in the beginning of the next performance that you do?
Yes.
Ashaya. All right, real quickly, disrupting Micah, I can't let you get away from Ashaya.
So I have a nonprofit where I work with misguided youth and I holistically take care of them as far as court advocating. So I testify for my adult charge kids, go to field, we court dates, we do all of their academic assisting. So I class check, if they don't go to class, I make them run. We do their workforce development. We have a couple community gardens where I teach them how to grow food.
Yeah.
Our ultimate goal is to have a self-sustaining campus for foster children.
Yeah.
Will you tell them all that there are people whose shoulders that they're standing on, that they have to live their life so that they can be strong shoulders for the next generation also? Tell them about ancestors?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Promise?
Sure.
Ashaya!
Hey!
All right, and then Suhan, attention?
Yes. Yeah, so I grew up in an environment where people weren't paying attention, people were distracted, people were just not around. And so paying attention is like being present, and it's also paying attention to my elders and being with them, hearing their stories, and then getting history stuff, like I'm thinking about the migrant justice movement now and how it's just a matter of, you know, a couple decades ago, it was Asian people that were demonized.
They're going to kill us.
Yeah.
All I want you to do is say, pay attention as much as you can. All right, so we're going to go because they need to do this thing. Who can use this camera to do a video real quick? We have one thing we have to do to commemorate the day. While we're doing that, I want to hear from Nat and counter-normativity. Yeah, they're here. We're going to go back through it. Matter of fact, everyone stand up, squish on this side of the room. Yes. We're going to do a video. Come on this side of the room real fast. Wait.
Okay, we're gonna do a video. I'm gonna talk really fast. And when I say power to the people, I'm gonna say power to the people, may it be so. And as soon as I say may it be so, you're gonna answer me back by saying may it be so, but you're gonna use your right hand, you're gonna put it in the air. So I'm gonna be like, power to the people, may it be so. And you're gonna go, may it be so. And you're not gonna put your fist down at all until the video is over, okay? You're gonna always put your fist down.
Thank you.
I love this. I need to see all of you. Please.
Yeah.
Come on. All right, ready?
Are you okay?
All right, are you guys ready? So I'm going to say power to the people. May it be so. May it be so. Power to the people. May it be so.
May it be so.
Power to the people. May it be so.
May it be so.
Power to the people,
may it be so.
You can power to the people, may it be so.
May it be so.
Oh, gotcha. And don't put your fist down until it's
all right.
Okay, ready?
Three, two, one.
Greetings, this is Free Eglin Femi out in New Mexico with the United States Department of Art and Culture. Wait a minute, start with a little bit. Greetings, this is Free Eglin Femi, founder of Untold RBA out in New Mexico and culture ship for the United States Department of Arts and Culture. This is my homie crew. We are all here to talk about commemorative justice and tactical urbanism. So in honor of our self-determined ancestors, we say power to the people. May it be so.
May it be so.
Yay! Veronica. Oh, wait a minute. Connectivity.
Yes.
Why?
So, system of oppression are to separate us and make us small and give us like a life of survival mode. And I think connecting with each other and seeing each other and creating that bond and weaving that world together is a way to bring it down.
So can we all promise to stay connected in some kind of way?
Woo!
USDAC?
Yes!
Yes!
Yes. Awesome. Awesome. Awesome.